Tickets for the Farm Assets Conference 1 week from today are available still online at willag.org or at farmassetsconference.com. Registration closes Wednesday. The cost is just $80. Register today. From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 14th day of November 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of AgMarket.net. Frayne Olson from North Dakota State University Extension, an agricultural economist, will join us. And we'll take up the weather forecast with Mark Russo at Everstream Analytics on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day at $6.57 and a quarter, 3/4 of a cent lower. The March at $6.59 and a quarter on its settlement, down 3 3/4. And May corn, 4 1/4 lower a bushel at $6.58 and a half. The January soybeans at $14.40 and a half cents, down 9 1/2. March at $14.44 3/4, down 9. And November beans a nickel lower at $13.82. And a quarter bean meal down $1.40. The bean oil 69 cents lower. Soft red winter wheat up 4 3/4 at $8.18 and a half, and the hard red 12 3/4 higher at $9.56 and a quarter. Live cattle futures for the day at 152.55, down 70. Feeders were up 87 1/2 cents, and lean hogs were 57 1/2 cents higher. Crude oil about $3 higher. Diesel fuel or heating oil down 2 8/10 of a cent, and the wholesale price of gasoline 8 cents lower. At $2.47 and a half. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at AgMarket.net to discuss what's happened in Chicago for the day. What was the big news, if anything, out of Chicago today, Kurt?
Well, nothing really earth-shattering for the most part. We kind of zigged and zagged a little bit. The export inspections, wheat came in below expectations at 76,000 tons. Corn, 484. The high guess was 500, kind of the upper end. Beans, we shipped out 1.8 million metric tons, and the range was 2 to 2.6 million metric tons. So we are shipping this stuff out. You know, we get maybe a little bit more moisture there in the Mississippi, can maybe load barges a little higher there or a little heavier to keep that going. Overall, just a real slow type of feeling to the marketplace. A little better chance of rain in South America, kind of also limited buying interest. Probably the main news, if any, was President of the U.S. and Chinese Premier were to meet, and thought maybe there'd be some major news coming out of that. I didn't get a chance to see if there's any details, but the way the market reacted there, it was kind of ho-hum and nothing really set in stone or real serious. Then lastly, we've got the harvest fairly well wrapped up. It's become a non-event here as far as on the reporting system, but this afternoon's progress reports expect to show corn harvest 93% complete as a nation. Range is 92 to 94. Last week, we were at 87. Soybean harvest, 97% complete. Last week, 94. And of course, wheat in the ground is 96% in the ground as a nation. The conditions will probably be a little bit more of a factor here. That's about ready to phase out as we go into dormancy. But winter wheat conditions are expected to be about 31% good to excellent versus 30%. Last week. A little longer term on that wheat, and clear across the Midwest, we're actually continuing to watch the drought monitor. Last year, we were dry for the most part, but we had some timely rains, and that kind of helped the situation where corn actually turned out a little better than what producers were looking for, and those bean yields continue to be so about average, maybe a little better than average. So, but the significance of that drought monitor and what we saw last year, we're going to have some timely rains come at us here if we don't see a whole lot of moisture materialize here this winter time.
Speaking of timely rains, as you mentioned, there was more rainfall for South America all the way through Argentina. I'm wondering if that will have much of an impact over time on what farmers should do here in the United States. I know many have suggested, especially for soybeans, going ahead and marketing that crop and the corn crop a little bit more time, but I'm wondering whether producers need to really consider sales by the time we get to the January timeframe.
January is the key time, as you mentioned there. Right now, there's not going to be a whole lot for sale, if any at all. Guys have filled the bin. They're not going to turn around and empty it. They've paid minimum storage. So there's pretty well a void in movement here between now and year end. And some of the commercial trade is a little concerned about, you know, trying to gather some additional coverage before these marketings kind of cut loose after the first of the year. Soybean-wise news, as you mentioned, we've got a huge, huge crop kind of factored in or expected in the Southern Hemisphere. So the pressure is on the South American farmer to follow through and actually produce a very large crop. If that fails to happen, due to some weather or whatever, that could probably get the bean market kind of wound up here this winter later on. And when you look at the supply-demand balance sheet, we're down to 200 million bushel carryout. That's not a whole lot. And when you look at that supply-demand balance sheet, we've got still some fairly good growth potential there, particularly in the crush area. And when you kind of look at the potential in here, these beans could get kind of wound up. So I think you got to play both sides of the market. I think you got to use some strength in here to go ahead and cash some of that stuff in. But I would do a replacement strategy here, a managed replacement strategy, where you can be in position to, you know, capture an up move here this winter and you don't feel like you kind of sold it too soon.
Anything from the U.S. dollar that we ought to talk about today?
Well, it's like all these other markets. It's just a wide, volatile trading range type of affair. You know, the bottom line is when people look at the U.S. dollar, they try to correlate it to export demand. I think as a producer, you just got to put that in the back burner and keep in mind that whenever a country, particular country, needs some grain or some food products, they're going to buy it. And when they don't need it, they're not going to buy it. I think the strength and weakness of the dollar is probably a little bit more for the world exporters and maybe more of these financial consultants that, you know, move money back and forth from country to country and through here. But this dollar is probably going to remain strong here for a while. It's had a heck of a sell-off in here, and a lot of analysts are looking at this last move as far as the dollar index goes is kind of a key top to watch.
Hey, thank you very much.
You bet. Take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with AgMarket.net. One week from today, I hope that you'll join the agricultural economist, the Farm Doc team, and the crop scientist, myself, and a couple of others at the iHotel for the Farm Assets Conference here in Urbana-Champaign. If so, you need to get yourself registered, and if you're not yet, farmassetsconference.com or online at willag.org, either one, to make your reservation today. Don't wait, because we'll close out the pre-registration on Wednesday, and we'll increase the price of the ticket from $80 to $90. So make sure that you get yourself registered for the Farm Assets Conference. We're going to talk about farm policy on that day. I will suggest this may be as important a topic for you right now as anything else that we'll take up for the day, because in 2023, the next farm bill will be under consideration, and one of the items that will be up for consideration is the reference price, what you all know as LDP. And you know full well that puts a bottom in the market, relatively speaking. And you'll want to know what they're thinking and to be involved in the process. You can do that at the Farm Assets Conference, farmassetsconference.com. Register today. We'll close out registration on Wednesday. Now, let's turn our attention to that broader picture going forward and talk a little bit about what the next decade might look like. I spoke with Frayne Olson from North Dakota State University Extension earlier today. We talked some about the current marketplace and then a lot more about what things look like going forward.
Yeah, so all summer long, obviously, we've been worried about the production side and you know, acres, bushels, crop condition. We're now in that transition zone. We're flipping our minds into the consumption side domestically, as well as looking at what's happening in obviously South American weather. And so, you know, weather and politics are the two big things we got to look at because they're the wild cards that nobody can forecast. In that regard, one of the things that I'm kind of concerned about and been watching for a while is this Chinese demand base, because we are, especially for soybeans, obviously very reliant on China as a major export partner for us. Even on corn, last year China was the largest corn buyer. They surpassed Mexican buying by a little ways. This year now, Mexico has returned to the number one slot, with China coming into number two, but still a very, very important market for us. And one of my biggest concerns is that the Chinese economy is starting to slow, and it'll probably have a bigger impact on beans than it will on corn, just because of the relative quantities. But it's going to be important for both commodities, because we do rely on that demand, primarily from obviously their livestock sector, which is dominated by pork. So their economy, which has been growing at double digits for quite a few years, people got concerned, especially now during COVID. Well, their growth rates are slowing to sub double digits. And the last forecast coming out of the World Bank was that this last year, so 2021, Chinese economy grew at about 8.5%. The current forecast for 2022 moving forward is about 2.5%. So the combination of African swine fever and the struggles the Chinese have had in trying to rebuild their hog herd on top of a slowing economy, part of that obviously because of COVID and the rules that China has for containing COVID, which are now starting to change. The amount of soybeans and corn that China is forecast to pull off the global market is flattening. And for global soybean, as well as to some degree global corn, we've been relying on this really nice, steady growth rate in demand from China for about 20 years. And the last couple of years, that's flattened out. So globally, if you think about flattening Chinese demand, you think about the current forecast is for a record soybean production by far coming out of Brazil. And we start looking at some pretty tight competitive environment within the global market. So my concern, again, kind of reiterating what others might have said, is that you have a window of opportunity, particularly for soybeans, between now and when that Brazilian soybean harvest starts, which this year it'll be a little early, so probably be mid-January when beans start to flow. You've got a window. You need to clean up those soybean sales. Now, on corn, it's a little bit more cloudy. I don't know that there's quite the time pressure, because in corn, we tend to have a much stronger demand base domestically. Our two big uses are livestock and ethanol, and they chew through and grind a lot of corn every day and every month. But the shock value, again, the surprise value for pricing comes in the export market. And so I do think we're going to be watching that very closely. I think it's something we're going to be talking about for an extended time period on, in particular, what is the Chinese buying looking like? So my concern is primarily for soybeans, but also somewhat for corn. Don't get sloppy in your marketing plans. And when you get an opportunity, be sure to make some sales.
So this flattening of the imports of grains and oil seeds by China has both short and long-term impacts. Long-term may be much more difficult. I'm wondering if you think that the middle class in China, which has grown to about the same size as the total population of the United States, a bit more than 300 million, if I remember correctly, will continue to grow, which means that they will have more need for red meat as incomes grow. People tend to eat more red meat. We could also talk about India, but they don't eat nearly the kind of meat that any other nation on the planet seems to. And does this cause a problem over the next decade?
Potentially it could. I mean, you're on the right track here. It's like, okay, so far the Chinese economy and the growth of the Chinese economy has really been in the manufacturing sector. You know, the joke in the trade is that, well, man, the Chinese are the global manufacturer for just about everything, in particular parts and components, which we're finding out now because of our supply chain issues. We produce a lot of the high valued stuff and the most technically difficult things here in the United States, but the very simple manufacturing processes, those things, those parts and components that we need for a lot of our manufacturing system here in the U.S. comes from the Chinese marketplace. Well, China is now trying to convert and expand their economy, not just from manufacturing, but into the technology arena, trying to make sure that, again, that middle class, as you said, the middle class of the Chinese, those job opportunities that people have, continue to grow and expand, because there's limits to how much you can manufacture as an individual country. So they're trying to diversify their economy, looking into this tech sector or the technology piece, trying to expand and make sure that their economy continues to grow. So, you know, the question is, will they be able to make that transition? What does that mean for, obviously, there's some security issues. The United States has been a bit hesitant to buy a lot of technology from China. Europe is in the same boat. They don't necessarily want to buy and become very reliant on a lot of the tech sector within the Chinese economy as part of their base. So there's some questions about, you know, will China be able to make this transition? If so, what's it going to look like as we move forward?
It'll make this week's meeting between Presidents Biden and Xi Jinping very interesting to watch, as it's related to geopolitics, Taiwan, and those tech heavy sectors that China would like to develop that the United States isn't sure that they want them to develop, and which of the economic powers continues to control the global marketplace, I suppose.
That is exactly right. And so this meeting this week is going to be critically important, but we're not going to have a lot of resolution. We're going to have this debate and discussion going on as we move forward. So our not only our trade relations and trade agreements with China are going to be very, very important, for not only for our economy, but more importantly for agriculture. And then also, you know, obviously, as you brought up, the military issues. There's still a lot of tensions, not only between the U.S. and China over Taiwan, but also the role that China is playing in the Russian-Ukrainian war, as well as the role that Russia plays in supporting North Korea. So there's still a lot of politics involved here. And as I said, I'm bad enough at forecasting the prices in the markets, let alone trying to forecast politics. So it's well out of my comfort zone.
Hey, thank you very much. And we'll try to bring you back into the comfort zone next time around. We appreciate it.
All right. Always a pleasure visiting.
That's Brain Olson with North Dakota State University. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics. Hi, Mark. Thank you very much. It's cold out. It feels colder than it should be, and I think that's actually the case. What can you tell me about the current conditions and whether they'll stick around or not?
Well, Todd, certainly winter has arrived across actually much of the country here, especially the central U.S., and it looks to stay in place for much of the next 10 days. So basically from now through almost Thanksgiving here of next week, temperatures are going to be unseasonably cold. So for much of here in Illinois and adjacent Indiana and eastern Iowa, it does look like high temperatures generally in the 30s and 40s, with then minimum temperatures being basically below zero. Below zero Celsius, below 32 Fahrenheit, especially across the northern areas, with then temperatures in the teens as well. So during this colder stretch, obviously an abrupt change from the unseasonably warm fall, But there does look to be, you know, some relief here arriving by Thanksgiving.
Well, that would be good. But I also heard there's snow in the offing maybe in the near term.
Yeah. So as cold air is in place, there are some small little waves of low pressure moving through. And that looked to generate several inches of snow, kind of on the order of about 1 to 3 inches across central and northern Illinois here coming up, especially during the day tomorrow and into tomorrow night. So not looking like any kind of, you know, big early snowstorm, but, you know, enough here to at least maybe cause some minor travel disruptions, but still, you know, pretty early, and some of that snow will melt in some of the southern areas as well.
You mentioned that maybe we would have warmer weather by the time we get to Thanksgiving. Does that stick around?
It looks to be right now, Todd. Yeah, but just kind of getting back to more of a seasonal pattern for at least 5, 6, 7 days. So, but, you know, no sign of any return to the anomalous warmth that we've just been in, but getting something closer to normal for late Nov.
Checking on the soybean crop in Brazil. Are things doing well in the primary growing states in the center west?
They are. Now, in center west Brazil, much of November has started on the drier side, but that changed in a big way over the weekend as rain activity developed across much of Mato Grosso and much of center west in general. And that is now starting what looks to be a general return of more normal rainfall totals here coming up these next couple of weeks.
About 30% of the crop coming out of that one state in Brazil. If you go further south in Brazil, things stay dry, I take it.
We are seeing some rain activity pick up across southern Brazil. In fact, over the weekend, Paraná down through Rio Grande do Sul, much of that acreage picked up significant rains, and there are more opportunities ahead. Not as much the next 5, 6 days, but more so coming up over the upcoming weekend and next week. That's the better rain opportunities for southern Brazil. So right now, we don't have really any concerns for Brazil. Actually, our concerns are down in Argentina.
Well, I was going to ask about that next because I've struck out twice so far. So what do we have in the way of dry weather in Argentina?
Yeah, well, like I mentioned before, we do have some, you know, high-level concerns for Argentina given the longer-term dryness and expectations here over the next several months, given the La Nina event. But this past weekend, there's actually, similar to Brazil, actually some big rains that developed in portions of Argentina to at least provide some temporary relief. But going forward now, we're not seeing, at least over the next couple of weeks, any kind of similar types of rain events. And on top of that, actually, temperatures beginning to heat up. In fact, the hottest temperatures of the growing season so far are on tap the next couple of weeks in Argentina.
Does this mean that La Nina, which most of you predicted would begin to recede in November, mid-November, really has begun to recede?
Yeah, we're starting to see likely a potential peak of the La Nina in recent weeks. At least over the past 7 days, there's been a little bit of warming of water temperatures, but La Nina is not going away anytime soon. And so, and that's still, you know, it looks like if there is the demise of La Nina, that's not until either late winter or spring. So the La Nina risks, you know, typical. Those are things that we're going to have to continue to watch as we go through this season.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do pick up your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. You can do that in two places, willag.org or farmassetsconference.com.